The Dodgers, the Los Angeles Dodgers have a pitcher named Alex Vesia. His number is 51. He's one of their better relief pitchers, but Jays fans hardly know anything about him. It's because he wasn't in the World Series. Instead, he had to step away for a family emergency. It had something to do with his wife. She was pregnant, and there was an emergency around her pregnancy. That's all we know. After Game 6, one of the Dodgers' starting players, Kike Hernandez, said the following, and maybe you've heard this story. This is what he says. After Bassett struck me out, I was looking up at the board to see the replay, and that's when I saw that he had 51. Instead of being mad that I struck out, I was kind of going back to the dugout thinking, did Bassett play with Vesia at some point? And then after the game, I saw that everybody had them. You see, all the Jays relief pitchers had Vesia's number stitched to their ball caps, 51. It was a sign of fraternity between the players. Hernandez continues, for those guys to do that, it's incredible. They're trying to win a World Series, but they understand that this is, life is bigger than baseball, and baseball's just a game. For them to do that with where we are at, with the stakes, hats off to them, and I want them to know that we appreciate them. Regardless of what happens tonight, we appreciate what they did. Life is bigger than baseball. Baseball's just a game. After reading these words from Hernandez, I'm kind of ashamed of myself for investing more into a World Series victory by the Toronto Blue Jays than is justified. I'm kind of embarrassed about myself, to be honest. I'm embarrassed about my rants and my yelling at the TV and all the accoutrements that go with following a World Series playoff experience. On Friday evening, after the Jays lost the game through a bit of careless gameplay, I was upset. I got even depressed, to be honest with you. It interfered with my sleep. Can you believe that? And then I think of Kike Hernandez's words, baseball is just a game. Life is bigger than baseball. And when I hear his words, sanity returns for a moment at least, until I think about the Game 7 loss. Right? It's just a game. It's just a game. It's just a game. Maybe if I say it 40,000 times, I'll believe it. Right? And I want you not to misunderstand me. I love baseball. I love the game. I think it's a great game. I love watching the Jays in the championship series. It's a great thing to experience, but it's still just a game in the end. It's not all of ultimate significance. As I say, I'm a bit ashamed of myself that I've invested more in it than it deserves. And it's not the only place I do this. And I suspect I'm not alone. We've been looking at the Christian story over the past few weeks. This is the Christian story I've been sharing to you in its bare bones form. Seven scenes. I've got them up on the slide there. There's seven simple steps, or we might say seven simple scenes. And we've been going over them week to week. You know, one, humanity fires God. Two, God hires Israel to bring people back home, to restore the collaboration. Three, Israel is fire or quits, hard to tell. I think a bit of both. Four, God takes up the job himself through Jesus. Number five, humanity fires God again by crucifying his son to a cross. Six, God rehires Jesus by raising him to new life. And seven, the church shares the story of Jesus with the world until he returns. That's the bare-bone Christian story. And 3 weeks ago, we looked at scene one, and it comes from the first three chapters in the book of Genesis. And I'm going to go over this briefly again with you to reinforce it into your mind, into your understanding, because my goal is at the end, you'll have these seven scenes down in your, they'll be etched into your memory. Somebody asks you, what is Christianity about? What is the Christian story about? You'll know. So we're on scene four, but we're going to go over scene one, two, and three to reinforce, because that's basically how we learn in life. by reinforcement. Unless you're a genius and you have spontaneous learning, and I think many of you are very bright here, but I see no geniuses, right? So none of us are geniuses. So this is how we learn, by reinforcement. Scene one comes from the first three chapters of the book of Genesis, where we find the story of Adam and Eve. The story attempts to answer a simple question, and the question is, why is the world the way it is? Like, why is the world in such a mess? And the answer the Bible gives is that the world is in such a mess because we have refused to collaborate with God as the junior partner. Rather, we have sought to be the senior partner in the human-God relationship. Or even better, we'd like to go it alone. Thank you very much, God. We appreciate your help, but we're going to go it alone. And the story of Adam and Eve in the Bible is humanity giving God the pink slip and going out on their own. You're fired. Scene one is that moment of decision. And that decision is represented by a fruit tree. You've seen this several times now. The fruit tree represents a choice for Adam and Eve. Will humanity collaborate with God as the junior partner to bring about a world of even greater beauty and wonder? Or will we seize power, overthrow God, and replace God with ourselves or whatever we create? And the world is the way it is, according to the Bible, because we chose to give up collaboration with God. We chose to go it alone. And it's not just a one-time event from long ago. It's something that gets reenacted in our lives day in and day out. Every day, human beings go about firing God from their life. You fire God every day, and so do I. That's what it means to be a sinner. That's all it means. It doesn't mean you're a bad person. It just means you fire God every day. And I fire God every day, and we go it alone. We choose to live apart from God in any meaningful sense. And whether we recognize it or not, we seize power in the way we make our decisions in life, how we go about making our decisions. We overthrow God, and we place ourselves in the God position, and this choice has created the world that we know today. And you just have to look around and see it. We even see it in the most intimate of relationships. That's why we're so guarded. That's why we're so protective. That's why we can't so easily open ourselves to each other. Even in a place like Trillium, we are still immensely guarded from each other. Well, how did that come about? Well, according to the Bible, it comes about because at the very center of it, we have refused to collaborate with God. We want to go it alone. It's probably this choice of going it alone, of firing God, going it alone, of my unwillingness to collaborate with God that makes baseball into more than a game for me. It becomes a form of identity. The Blue Jays are an extension of my identity. And when they lose, I lose too. My unwillingness to collaborate with God causes me to invest my identity in a baseball game. Now, isn't that insanity? Truly? I'm going to invest my identity in a baseball game instead of partnering with God. 3 weeks ago, we looked at scene two. Scene two is about how God deals with being fired. You know, because God could have simply thrown up his hands, if he had hands. Well, he doesn't, but if he had hands, he could have just thrown up his hands and said, okay, have it your way. Have it your way. If this is what you really want, good luck. But God doesn't do that. Instead, God looks for a way to undo our choice to live life apart from him, because God understands the choice we have made in firing him. God knows the consequences of our decision to fire him. He knows the disaster we're bringing upon ourselves and upon the world that we are a part of when we try to go it alone from him. Our decision to go alone is an unfolding disaster, and it will lead to our own destruction and probably the world's too. God continues to seek to collaborate with us, even when we fire him. He wants to bring us back to that moment when we stand again before the tree and give us the opportunity to make a different choice. We can choose to partner with God this time instead of trying to go it alone. God will not force this upon you. Understand, he will not force this upon me. He will not force this upon the world. This is something we have to choose for ourselves. It's something we have to freely choose for ourselves. And this brings us to scene three of the Christian story. God chooses to use human beings as the means for our return. Because it won't work if it comes directly from God. Actually, we're in scene two, I believe. I think I made a little mistake there. Let me go back and take a look here. I think we're still in scene two. Yeah, scene two. God hires Israel. Yeah, we're still in scene two. God chooses to use human beings like you and me to bring us back home, to be the means of our return, because God knows that God can't do it himself. That's already been decided at the tree. We've already fired God. God cannot force us to return home through his own actions. So he decides to use human beings, and he searches for a tribe or a nation or a people who will voluntarily agree to be his emissary to the world. And eventually God chooses an unassuming, inconspicuous people named Israel to be his emissary. They are a bunch of nobodies. Understand this. They have no standing in the world. They're not part of the great panoply of great people and nations out there. They're a bunch of nobodies. And God makes a covenant with this people called Israel. That's a special set of promises that are exchanged between them. God agrees, they agree to collaborate with God as the junior partner, and God agrees to collaborate them and choose them as his chosen people. They become God's chosen instrument to bring about our return home. And that means Israel is to be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. They're meant to be a light to the nations, the stewards of God's truth, and they are also the vehicle by which the Messiah will come into the world through them to bring salvation to all. And God creates a two-step process in Israel. First, he chooses Israel to collaborate with him. He gives them the opportunity to collaborate with him in a way that Adam and Eve rejected. They will enter into a deep collaboration with God. Israel will bear the deep fruit of this collaboration with God, and then they will share this way of life with all people. They will lead the whole world back into that most powerful relationship, that relationship with God, to the full collaboration with God. And of course, we know this plan did not come about, because you just have to look around and see the world the way it is today. It's as crazy and as ill-sorted as it's ever been. So obviously, Israel did not succeed in what God had called them to. And when you read the Old Testament, and it's about 800 pages, it's a long book, you learn why the world hasn't changed a bit. Israel did not do what God called them to. They did not do what they had promised God they would do. And confronted with the same choice as Adam and Eve, standing before that same fruit tree that Adam and Eve stood before, the same fruit tree that you and I stand before, all people stand before, Israel made the same choice as we all do. They fired God and went about life on their own. They refused the opportunity, the offer of collaboration. Israel cannot make that unique kind of surrender that's required to collaborate with God. It's not that they didn't try. They tried again and again and again and again and again, but they just couldn't do it. Each time they succumbed to the same temptation that was before Adam and Eve. Every time. They seized power and overthrew God and put themselves in charge. And the plan of reconciliation that God was attempting to accomplish through Israel, the full restoration of a relationship with all people, that full collaborative relationship that God seeks with every one of us, the opportunity for true collaboration with God was lost in Israel's fall. And the world today is still committed to going it alone. The world still lives in the darkness of rivalry, violence, and greed. The need for an emissary of light is as real as it's ever been. And this is true even if Israel failed in its sacred task. And there's no point in God casting around for a new people to choose to be his emissary. The task of collaboration in the way that God seeks with us is ultimately not available to us as human beings. I think that's what the story of Israel tells us. Israel failed, and so would every other group of people. They too would fail if God brought them into that sacred relationship with him. And it's with this understanding that God chose to become one of us. And this is the essential teaching of the Christian story. God chooses to become one of us. Instead of human beings striving to be God, God chooses to become a human being. Now, of course, in doing so, God gives up all his glory and his power. God enters into the full frailty of human life. God is willing to assume the role of the junior partner in this relationship. That means God being tempted in the same way that you and I are tempted, same way that Adam and Eve were tempted, same way that Israel was tempted, the same choice that confronts us every day of our life. It would mean that God too would suffer the full effects of the world's decision to go it alone. Rivalry, violence, greed. A high cost for sure, but it might just work. And the Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. And we have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son, who came from the Father full of grace and truth. You know, it's an interesting feature of the Jesus story that he is interpreted in many different ways in the New Testament. Sometimes Jesus is understood as the new Adam, the new human being, the new creation. Sometimes Jesus is understood as the new Moses, the new lawgiver. Sometimes Jesus is understood as the new Israel, the one who fulfills the calling of Israel, one person fulfilling the destiny of a people. However you understand Jesus, new Adam, new Moses, new Israel, Lord, Prince of Peace, Messiah, Son of God, whatever it might be, first of all, he has to pass a test that every other human being has failed. And this is the story of Jesus in the wilderness. This is scene 4. It's the scene that's found in the Gospel of Matthew. This is the moment when the dark power and its tempting voice comes to Jesus. The same dark power that comes to all people. The same dark power that came to Adam and Eve. The same dark power that came to Israel. Again and again, it comes to you and me too, every day. This dark voice tempts Jesus with the same temptation that it presents to all people. To forgo the divine human collaboration, to fire God, and to choose to go it alone in life. To replace God with ourselves. When Jesus is driven by the Spirit into the wilderness, it's this moment when Jesus stands before the same fruit tree that we all stand before. He's given the same choice and the two same basic options to choose from. Collaborate with God, go it alone. First, though, Jesus fasts for 40 days and 40 nights in the wilderness. This is a reenactment of Israel. Remember, Israel was essentially constituted by God in the desert, in the wilderness, when they left Egypt, the bondage of Egypt. Before they got to the promised land, they stayed for a time in the desert, the wilderness, between the two. It's a time when they were completely dependent on God's provision for them. They were completely naked in their needs before God. But in Israel's case, instead of it lasting 40 days, it lasted 40 years. It was because of their rebellion against God. They were not willing to enter into that collaborative relationship. They refused to surrender. Now, I wouldn't get too caught up in the number 40. 40 simply means a long time in the Bible. Whether it's 40 days or 40 years, it means a long time. Israel wandered for a long time in the wilderness. Jesus fasted for a long time. Jesus fasted to the very limit of human hunger. It's in that moment when Jesus fasts for 40 days and nights that the devil comes to him at the end. Comes to Jesus with a simple temptation. If you're the Son of God, turn these stones into bread. In that moment, the dark voice offers Jesus the same temptation he presented to Adam and Eve. The power is in you. You of all people, you have the power to turn stones into bread. You're hungry. Of course you are. So take matters into your own hands, exert your own claim to godhood, and satisfy your justified and legitimate needs. Jesus offers the devil a simple retort. It's written, man, humanity, human beings shall not live on bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God. And what Jesus means by this is that our needs in life are not justification for undoing the collaborative relationship that God calls us to. We're not to abandon our collaboration just because the exigencies of the moment, just because we're in the pinch, causes us to do so. Just because we're in a pinch doesn't give us license to separate ourselves from God, to step away from the collaboration. Jesus says only in a few chapters later from chapter 4 and chapter 6, this is what Jesus says. So do not worry saying, what shall we eat? What shall we drink? Or what shall we wear? For the pagans run after all these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them. Your heavenly Father knows that you need them. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Your heavenly Father is completely engaged in his collaboration with you. Even if we refuse to collaborate with God, our heavenly Father is collaborating with us today, completely engaged with your needs and your life circumstances in ways that you are not even remotely aware of. You know nothing about what God is up to in your life. God is already way ahead of you in providing the provisions of your needs, your daily needs in your life. It's not that we're to be completely passive, of course not. It's just that we don't assume the God position in our circumstances. We assume our position as the junior partner, and we allow God to assume God's position as the senior partner. That's what we're being called to. And it's that little surrender that's so difficult to make. It's that little surrender that changes everything. We assume our position, God, and we allow you to assume your position in our lives. We embrace this truth. That little surrender, that little step down from the God position in our lives and coming back to only assuming our own position changes everything. And yet no one's been able to do it. Nobody. The temptation is to take over. It's always the temptation to take over. And it's especially present when we're in our neediest places. It's the most powerful temptation when our personal circumstances are so pressing upon us. It's in those moments, most of all, that we're tempted to take control of it. Two more times the devil tempts Jesus to assume the God position in his life, to go it alone. Yeah, just throw yourself off the pinnacle of the temple and let's see what happens to you. Let's test God's goodness and love for you because supposedly you're God's son. If God's going to come to the rescue for any human being, it's going to be you, Jesus. Let's see this. See if this divine human collaboration is really what it's said to be. But Jesus is not going to go there. He doesn't take the bait. He's not going to elevate himself into the God position, even though as Son of God, he might rightly claim it. He will not go into the God position. He says, I'm not going to put my collaboration with God to the test. I'm not going to seek glory in any way but through my relationship, through my collaborative relationship with my heavenly Father. So get lost, Satan. And it says in that moment, the devil left him. It's another way of saying Jesus passed the test. The test that Adam and Eve failed, the test that Israel failed, the test that you and I fail all the time. He passes that test. Now, Jesus' testing isn't over, far from it, but it's because Jesus will not elevate himself into the God position that allows him to fulfill what God had desired to accomplish through Israel. To be his emissary of light and love to all. To be the means by which the divine human collaboration can take place in all people. And Jesus now becomes holy high priest. He becomes a light unto the nations, the steward of God's truth. He is the Messiah who will bring salvation to the world. Jesus will show us the way to enter into that full collaboration with God. And this is scene four in the Christian story. God takes up the job himself through Jesus and opens the way for our return to collaboration. But unfortunately, humanity will try to close the door again. You see, we're determined to go it alone. We're absolutely determined to go it alone. And so we're going to fire God again in Jesus by nailing him to a cross. Jesus is going to get fired, and by Jesus getting fired, God is going to get fired again. And it's not going to be pretty. And it's to that scene we move to next Sunday.